Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text 27. Utsis Riksho Tatumalam Nirabhijyata Vai Gudam Tata Ayu Tata Mitra Utsarga Ubhaya Ashraya Utsis Riksho Dhatumalam Nirabhijyata Vaigudam Tata Payus Tato Mitra Utsaga Ubhayashraya Utsis Riksho Dhatumalam Nirabhijyata Vaigudam Tathayustato Mitra Utsaga Ubhayashraya Utsis Riksho Dhatumalam Nirabhijyata Vaigudam Tathayustato Mitra Utsaga Ubhayashraya Translation. Thereafter, when he desired to evacuate the refuse of eatables, the evacuating hole, anus, and the sensory organ, therefore, thereof developed, along with the controlling deity, Mitra. The sensory organ and the evacuating substance are both under the shelter of the controlling deity. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Even in the matter of evacuating stool, the refuse is controlled. So how can the living entity claim to be independent? End of purport. Oh, we get it throughout this. Yeah, get up to that song. Chakshu really taught me, and it does my secret of Aidamaha. So. A one-sentence purport, which makes us think, even in passing stool, the stool is controlled, or as Prabhupada writes very eloquently, the evacuating substance. That is all controlled. When you go to India and you have some digestion problem, the stomach or the intestines, and you have difficulty evacuating, and then you really think about how you are under control of material nature. In the Isha Upanishad purports, it is stated that it's better to live in a place where the threefold miseries are readily apparent than to live in a place in which the miseries are covered over so that you actually think you're an independent enjoyer. I was discussing with someone, I think it was Judah Karma yesterday, about the past 10 years in the USA have seen an unprecedentedly long period of economic expansion. And that kind of setting or circumstance will certainly influence the mentality of the people. And it will also affect devotees who are not completely on the transcendental platform. When the circumstances are such that it looks like material happiness is possible, and indeed it's happening and people are getting it, when things look like that, then it's harder to preach Krishna consciousness. Because the contamination of hope for material enjoyment spreads like anything. People look around and see, yeah, that will He's got a nice job. He's getting a nice job. He's spending. He's earning. She's working. She's buying. And the kind of false euphoria spreads, and people become very hopeful about material pleasure. This is the thing you always have to watch. Hopes for material enjoyment. That's the captivating substance. We discussed a few days ago how Krishna says, moga asha, moga karma, no? Moga jnana vachetasa. The fact is, all your hopes will be defeated. All your activities will be frustrated, and your attempts at knowledge will be bewildered when you take shelter of the material energy. So it doesn't take much for people to feel that life is going to be good when they live a material life. And especially when there are signs of economic prosperity and opportunity everywhere, then people very quickly forget about the need to perform austerity or God realization. We all know what Lord Rishabhdev's instructions are. He was speaking to a gathering of brahmanas, and also his 100 sons were there. Most of his sons, they were ritualistic brahmanas, about 80 or 81 of the 100. And 11 of them or so were Kshatriya rulers, and 9 of them were the famous Navayogendras, who you'll meet in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, the 9 great yogis or sages. And they, of course, were experts in transcendental dharma, Bhagavad dharma. The other 80 sons were ritualistic brahmanas, Satvagun types. And then there were the Kshatriyas, headed by Maharaj Bharata, who would be emperor of the world. So, Lord Rishabhdev wanted to instruct his sons, because he was retiring from his position as emperor. And, therefore, he wanted to give them perfect advice for how to guide the citizens. So, Nayam deho deha bhajan niloke tastan taman arhate vidbujam ye. This human form of life is not meant for working to get things that the animals, such as the pigs who eat stool, easily get. This human form of life is meant for something else. When Prabhupada once was lecturing on this verse in Sweden, he said that actually this kind of knowledge could be very dangerous for living within the governments of today. We're telling people, don't endeavor for economic development. Get lost in those false hopes. And that is like an apparat. It's a great offense today. Because people become controlled by others when they have this desire for economic expansion. When you want to play ball in the economic system for yourself, then you come under the control of the materialists. And they want that. They want to encourage you. Prosperity is here. You can do it. Come on, get into it. Play ball. You know, get into the stock market. Invest in the dot-coms. Invest in the technology. Get more skills. Get more university education. It's all happening. Come on, jump in, dive in. You'll be successful. This is all an arrangement to capture people's material desires and increase the material desires. Businessmen love it when people's material desires are increasing, because that means they'll buy more. They hate it when people start to withdraw their spending power. That's always a crisis. You'll notice in the news that the economic indicators watched very carefully show things like how much the consumers are spending or how much they're not spending, how they are using their money for big ticket items. When the indicators like that are up, everyone's happy. It's like, you know, every morning you hear the Sankirtan scores here. So-and-so did that. Bhakta so-and-so did that. And then the devotees become enlivened. For the materialists, they have their scores too. And it's the economic indicators. How much activity on the stock market. How much people are spending. That makes them enlivened, because they feel the motive passion around them. Yes, yes, it's happening. economic hopes. And when those economic indicators go down, then they start to worry. Just like now, there's quite a bit of concern. When the new president took office, immediately the first thing he said was, hey, the economy, I'm worried about it. Don't blame me. It happened before I took office. The first thing, you know, don't bloop because of me. You know, this came before I, you know, became president. So this is people's concern today. This is the focus of their energies. Economic prosperity, the hope for sense gratification. Why is there the need for economic prosperity? Very simple. Because people want the money to arrange better circumstances for sex life. That was Prabhupada's pungent comment and analysis. He said, when you look at all the activity in the cities, seeing people go here and there, traveling back and forth to work, working, shopping, buying, what is the purpose of it all? He said, they'll lie. They'll tell you that the whole purpose is that, you know, we have to eat. We have to sleep somewhere. We need a roof over our head. We need food on the table. That's what they'll always say. We're practical. No, he said, what they really mean to say is we want better conditions for sex life. This is probably pulling the cover off the situation so you can see clearly what's going on. The hope for the conditioned soul is somehow or other they're going to be right conditions for good sex life. That is the dream. Somehow or other it's going to happen. Maybe not today, but tomorrow. I'm going to work for it, and with my money I will generate nice circumstances where the whole process that we heard about yesterday will go on in a wondrous way, and then my life will be complete. That is the centerpiece of material life. Now, we were hearing yesterday how the genitals, the object of sexual efforts, the perception of sexual pleasure is all under the control of demigods. And of course, the demigods are ultimately under the control of Krishna. In this way, through every verse in this chapter 10, we're getting a vision about how controlled we are. There is a sense organ. The sense organ has a sense object. Then there is the perception of whatever pleasure you're getting when the sense organ connects with the sense object. All that is controlled. It's embedded in a system of control. And above that whole system is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we don't feel that. We don't see that. We simply feel, I've got my senses, indriyani pranayaho. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that this body is a bag of senses. We don't even feel that. That's how ignorant we can be. We just think this body is a bag of flesh with bones and blood. No. If you want to be precise, when you think of the body, you think of it as a collection of senses. And as soon as you understand that it's a collection of senses, you must think of the sense object, because senses always exist in relation to sense objects. There's a fascinating discussion in the 11th canto between Uddhava and Krishna, where Uddhava asked the Lord, look, how can self-realization be possible when the senses are always lodged in the sense objects, and the sense objects are always lodged in the senses? How can you break up this union? Otherwise, enlightenment is not possible. The senses, including the mind, run towards the sense objects. And these sense objects are always running into the mind. How do you break this up? The Lord answered that this same question was asked by a few of the four Kumaras to Lord Brahma, and he had a bit of difficulty answering that question. To help Lord Brahma answer that question, because unless you know the answer, Krishna consciousness is not possible. To help Brahma answer the question, the Hamsa avatar appeared, the Lord in the swan incarnation. And the Lord explained, it is indeed true that it is impossible from the material point of view by material efforts to stop the senses from flowing towards the sense objects and vice versa. In fact, Hamsavatar explained, there's just a permanent reciprocal relationship between senses and the sense objects. You can think about this during the day as you watch your senses and see what they're doing. They're always in relation to some sense object. You can't break it up. The only way you can deal with the situation is by rising above the whole situation. Get out of the materialistic cycle of material senses pursuing material sense objects and rise up to the bhakti platform in which the senses are engaged for Krishna's pleasure. Then you escape. Otherwise, not possible. Especially, it is explained that the materialistic mind likes to think of itself as the enjoyer and the doer. As soon as you think like that, you leave yourself wide open for this perpetual cat chasing its tail of sense objects and senses. You go round and round and round. You leave yourself wide open to that because with our minds, we think, I am the enjoyer, I am the doer. As soon as you think like that, you're caught in this pursuit of a cat chasing its own tail. Round and round and round you go. Senses, sense objects. Sense objects, senses. Senses, sense objects. Round and round and round. And that you do from one body to another, birth after birth. Sometimes you get fatigued of all this. But unless you have the association of devotees, that fatigue, that temporary material exhaustion will not be enough to sustain you in Krishna consciousness. We see that all the time. Persons come here and they're feeling the whips of material nature. But unless they take up the active association of devotees, they can't last. They need more than temporary fatigue. They need a taste of life on the spiritual platform. In the association of devotees, material exhaustion is a good thing. Lord Chaitanya is described as akinchana gotra. He's the property of those who are tired of material enjoyment. But that good fortune will only manifest when the exhaustion takes shelter of the association of devotees. So this thing about the senses and the sense objects is very difficult. And especially, it's so difficult because we don't see our sense gratification as being part of a system of control. Just like we were discussing in the purport yesterday. How it can be that even the perception of sexual pleasure is controlled. This really strikes at the root of our independence because every conditioned soul, man or woman, likes to think that their sexual activity is their business, it's under their own control, it's their private thing, and when Maya gets in your brain, you start to contemplate how you can arrange unlimited possibilities for sensual gratification. It's all your thing, it's your private world. And if you just set that sense organ loose, it's going to lead you to your own private world of tastes and experiences in which you are in control. Therefore, the men get proud. I'm a man, and I got to do my thing, and I express myself in this way. And now the women, they're making public their own pride in their bodies and sense gratification. Yes, it's my affair. I want to enjoy it like this. And it's all up to me. Why should the men be the only ones who take the aggressive role? I can also do like that. And I can unlock the door of sensual possibilities. This is what everyone's thinking. When actually the whole thing is totally controlled. You can't get one drop more of material happiness than your karma allows. That's the funny thing. You can dream these sensual fantasies all you want. You can endeavor for sensual gratification, but it's strictly controlled by your karma. I know a good example. One Gurukuli. He's the son of a devotee, and he's 21 now. And he's kind of a good-looking guy, and his father and mother are very good devotees, and they've raised him very nicely. But, you know, he was going through his experimental phase. So for the past 3 years, he's been telling me, look, Maharaj, you've got to understand, there's one regular principle I got to break. It's got to be done. Otherwise, life cannot be properly lived. I've got to break it. So he's been telling me that since he's 18. Now, where he lives in Australia, I mean, illicit sex flows like water. It's just nothing anybody worries about. It's like, you know, going to the corner store or boiling water or something like that. It's just, you know, it just falls out of the sky. They start in high school when they're 13. If by the time you're 15 you haven't had an affair, you're considered nuts and crazy. I mean, it's just easily available. No one thinks twice about it. But here he is. He's a good-looking guy. For 3 years, since he's 18, he's been trying, and he told me a couple weeks ago, now I'm 21 and still nothing. Nothing has happened. I said, well, maybe you ought to understand that either, number one, it's not your karma, you can't enjoy him that way, or number two, Krishna is personally being merciful upon you and spoiling your attempts. So now he's got one last plan. He's going to move to Hollywood and live with a Gurukuli who's in Hollywood now, and he's going to be an actor. And that way he hopes to get all the girls. No one thinks. It's according to my karma. The sense gratification is under control by a demigod, then by Krishna. You don't think like that. You just see, it's up to me. I feel lusty, and so it's all according to how I feel and my own abilities. You know, I'll study some books, I'll read some magazines, I'll get it all down, and I'll watch some movies, I'll see how it's done, it'll all just flow. It's completely controlled. That is the point of this chapter. Every sense function is controlled by a demigod, and the original desire is there in Krishna. But to speak of this Gurukuli, I know myself, when I was 14, 15, 16, growing up in the city, all the guys around me were always talking about their sensual affairs. Most of it was just, you know, they were just talking. But still, that was the cool thing. Yeah, I did this, I did that, I was with this girl, this happened. And so I used to really feel bad, like, why can't I do that? I remember when I was 14 praying to God, why do I have to think about everything? Why can't I just be a party guy and enjoy it like the others? I really prayed like that. Where's my sense gratification? Why can't I get it? It was very painful. I remember my younger brother, he's a year and a half younger than me. So he was 12, I was 14 or so. And so we were hanging out with the guys on the street, you know. The guys who our mother warned us, don't hang out with these kind of guys. So, you know, the guys are, you know, they're 15, 16-year-olds. They're talking about their exploits of the weekend. Oh, it was all fantasy, but, you know, yeah, I did this with her, I did that. You guys don't know how it was good, and on and on and on. So, my brother, he started getting into it, you know. Yeah, I've done the same thing, too. Yeah, I've been with so many girls. And I mean, because I know good and well, you know, we had a real heavy Christian mother, and we hadn't done anything. But still, he was getting with the talk, you know. Yeah, girls all the time, you know, every day, every night, yeah. So I knew immediately what to do. I'm going to tell mother on it. I immediately went back to the house. Mom, you know, Larry's out there telling all the guys that he has heaps of illicit sex. My mother just blew her stack because I was happy she's going to get him now. Go get him and bring him here immediately. So I went, hey, brother, mother wants to talk to you. So I brought him to mother, and then she just laid into him. How dare you embarrass this Christian family? How dare you speak of the ways of the devil and tell people you do these things when you know good and well in this house these things are forbidden? She just laid into him for an hour. And my brother was just shaking, and then she told him, There's only one way you can atone. I want you to go to every house in the neighborhood, knock on the door, and tell each person who comes to the door that you are a Christian and you don't do these things. And he actually did it. He knocked on every door in the neighborhood and said, "Excuse me, but I'm a Christian and a follower of Jesus, and we don't engage in these kind of activities." So, this is the pressure that people feel. I have to produce. I have to have good sense gratification. But actually, there's no such thing as good sense gratification. It exists simply in the mind, and it's all controlled according to your karma. The perception of sensual pleasure, the actual experience, is just a product of your karma. Once you understand that, you start to relax, because you can't get a bit more material happiness than your karma allows. It's all rigidly controlled. There's no opportunity. That's what enlivens us, opportunities for sense gratification. In our low moments, that's what enlivens us. But when you start to understand there's no free opportunity, it's all controlled and regimented, then you lose your enthusiasm. But otherwise, when you look at the modes of material nature through materialistic eyes, you say, well, it's up to me. I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll arrange in this way, I'll arrange in that way. And you get intoxicated, infatuated with your so-called opportunity for creative expression, which is not there. So Prabhupada is taking great, he's again and again making that point in this chapter about every sense organ. You are controlled, even in the matter of evacuating stool. The stool is controlled. So how can you claim to be independent? That's a question we have to ask ourselves. How can I think I'm independent? Now, we know that I can't do what I like in terms of the police department. I can't do what I like in terms of the Internal Revenue. But what about I can't do what I like in terms of material enjoyment? This is a humiliating thought. It's a thought that we hide from because it's striking at the root of material existence. I am the enjoyer. And I have a leeway, I have liberty, I have freedom to enjoy. And the point of this chapter is no. Your senses, the sense objects, the sensual experience is all controlled. But this is a tough message to hear, as we've been explaining, because it strikes at the root of our disease. I remember, before coming to Krishna consciousness, I started to read Prabhupada's books, and I had a Krishna book. I just loved it. And at that time, the Krishna book, it had a front piece, a front page, which just said on it, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. I had the Sanskrit verse, Ishvara Padma Krishna, such as on the big one. So Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So I was trying to get my fiancé into Krishna consciousness, and so I decided to give her a Krishna book. And I'll never forget, she took the book in her hand, kind of critically, opened it up to that front page, and she said, Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. Like, that's my job. I'll never forget that. I was astonished. That is indeed the bottom line of the conditioned soul, in all honesty. Krishna, the supreme enjoyer? That's for us to do. This is the great difference between bhakti yoga and other attempts at religion. Other attempts at religion never present to you how the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. They'll tell you he's the creator, he's the maintainer, he's the annihilator. Don't get him angry, but they'll never tell you he's the expert enjoyer, because that's what we feel is our job. And we don't want to hear about Krishna doing that. We want to hear about us doing that, right? Yeah. If I say, let's all talk about our enjoyment, yeah, we start, feel natural. But if we say, let's come here in the morning and hear about Krishna's enjoyment, well, most people want to stay away. And that's what makes real devotees or not, how eager we are to hear about Krishna's enjoyment. This whole temple is a facility for giving pleasure to Krishna and allowing the devotees to witness Krishna enjoying. We prepare food and offer it to Krishna. We offer arti to Krishna. We sing to Krishna. We dance before Krishna. We talk about Krishna in the presence of Krishna. We worship Krishna's pure devotee. Everything for Krishna. We're simply witnessing Krishna's enjoyment, trying to give Krishna more pleasure, and that is our life. In this way, that disease of being the enjoyer becomes cleansed. And we have to face that disease squarely. It's what causes us so much problems. And this is what takes older devotees away. You see, what happens is, when we don't, at some point in our Krishna consciousness, address the need to try and chant without offense, then the weeds grow. This is explained by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that if you persist in chanting without attention, the weeds grow, and these weeds are desires for material enjoyment. So when older devotees neglect to take up the need or drop the need to chant attentively, then weeds grow, and eventually their Krishna consciousness falls apart gradually, and it may even do it abruptly through some mad elephant offense. This is what's happening. But if we all concentrate on the need to seriously chant Hare Krishna, weeds won't grow. Or if they do grow a little bit, you'll be able to see them immediately. Lord Chaitanya says that's your job, to be an expert gardener. As soon as you see weeds coming, you pull them out. Because when we chant inattentively, the energy of the chanting also goes to water material desires. So Lord Chaitanya explained. It's a little hard for us to understand. Because we think, well, I'm not chanting with attention, but anyway, it's all for Krishna somehow or other. Lord Chaitanya explains that offensive chanting increases the material desires. The water of hearing and chanting causes weeds to grow when you're not focused on the holy name. So this is what gives problems. Now, when you first come to Krishna consciousness, you feel this bliss that you never felt before. You feel this unique experience. But as the years go by, you start to take bhakti in a very familiar way. And you don't feel the bliss that the new devotees feel. And then you start getting cynical. And then you look for other ways than the nine processes of devotional service to express yourself. And of course, sexual pleasure is one of them. Career, you get career-minded. Let me achieve something in the outside world. I need a challenge. Within the nine processes of devotional service, I don't see a challenge. Let me find a challenge in the material world so I can feel fulfilled, so I can feel like I'm a real person. What about the challenge to chant with attention? That has to be the mainstay of each devotee. The fact is, us older devotees, we have to admit, what is good for the new bhaktas is also good for us. If somebody new comes along, any older devotee will tell him, hey, yeah, you got to go to the program, you got to hear your rounds, you got to have a regulated life. But that's also good for the older devotees. Why just the new ones? In fact, the older devotees should be more absorbed in these things, because without it, they're going to chant with offenses, and then they're going to go away. So this is what's going on. Without a daily endeavor to chant Hare Krishna with attention, older devotees become corroded and fall apart. And then their efforts begin to manifest in disturbing ways. Their efforts become caught up with sense gratification. That's the natural thing when you don't chant with attention. But if each devotee takes it as his challenge in life, I must chant the holy names and hear them, then life becomes very simple. That challenge is enough as it is. And the more you chant attentively, the more you're eligible to see Prabhupada's gifts in terms of the wider chanting. There's your individual chanting. Then there are the sankirtan efforts to get others to chant. It all can expand from your chanting. The kirtan starts with your japa and expands outward. And then you start getting reciprocation, because from your individual kirtan of chanting japa, the sankirtan is expanding, and then Lord Chaitanya reciprocates with you, because you're chanting, you're getting others to chant, and therefore your own chanting becomes better. So everything can come from this chanting. So much so, we'll just end in a second, that when Prabhupada was speaking in Los Angeles at the start of the sankirtan boom in 72, he told the devotees, when he was thanking them for their helping him please a spiritual master, very feeling that he was thanking them, "You're helping me fulfill the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Thank you so much." Someone asked him, "How do you become an empowered book distributor?" And Prabhupada's response was, "You chant your rounds from beginning to end without interruption." And in the Prabhupada's last trip to the West before he departed in 77, in London, he was asked the same question Rohini Smith asked him. Prabhupada replied, "How do you become an empowered book distributor? Chant your rounds from beginning to end without interruption." In other words, your book distribution, your preaching, your Krishna conscious missionary efforts will all expand from your own chanting. This is the actual understanding. And not only will you be able to preach, to distribute, to engage others in Krishna service, but you'll be protected from the weeds. You won't have hopes for material enjoyment anymore. You won't be victimized thinking you're the enjoyer. Your heart and soul will be how to chant Hare Krishna with attention and get others to do the same. If this community can make that as its quest, it'll continue to be in the lead of Krishna consciousness in North America. It just takes some physical arrangement of your life, how to honestly arrange your day so you can chant with attention. And then everything will even increase even more. Thank you all very much for your association. Please give me your blessings. Hear the Hare Krishna mantra.